I remember when we first started this whole podcast thing, we just came up with the name God Journey. Some people didn't like it. I think it's perfect. This is not about me. This is not my journey. I am a supporting actor in a greater drama that's going on. This is about him.
Thinking outside the box isn't about whether you go to a meeting or not. It's about breaking free of the obligations of religious performance and living in the adventure of a relationship with God as our Father.
Two real guys talking about life, that's a good tagline.
Slinging freedom all over the place and making no apologies, this is The God Journey.
You're Wayne Jacobson.
And I am Brad
Cummings. No.
I knew that would get you.
Really confusing here in the old podcast.
We did the mellow intro, so we have to declare who we are.
Because people get confused. They write me and say, well, either you or Brad said this on the podcast, because they don't know the voice yet. I am Wayne Jacobson.
And that's simply because we don't take a breath and we interrupt each other a lot.
We do.
Which is fine.
And because you sound like James Dobson, and I don't.
Yeah, you're Joyce Meyer.
No.
I'm James Dobson.
Let's not go there again.
You're Joyce Meyer.
It only confuses people. Well, summer's at its end.
Doesn't feel like it. It's still pretty hot.
It's a Labor Day weekend. I'm in Texas.
Oh, that's right. Time warp, coupling, whatever thing. You're not here, and I'm not here. And
we have recorded this. I have arrived in the great state of Texas, which is always scary to me.
Why do they call it Labor Day when you're not supposed to work? It shouldn't be Laborless Day.
It's when women have babies.
Oh. I didn't know that.
Well, now you know.
No, no, no. That's what Labor Day is about?
That's what I hear.
Women... Is it a day that celebrates unions? I don't know, honestly. I just know it means you don't have school and you don't have work.
It's the last weekend of summer, and it's the beginning of the football season coming quickly. And...
But why do we have it?
Because the unions need another holiday.
Someone negotiated for a day off.
Well, the soldiers.
I like it.
The soldiers got one. The workers wanted
Memorial
one.
Day and Workers' Day. They should call it Workers' Day. Labor Day. Do you work? Do you not work?
Do you really want to change the culture? Really? Is this?
That's a great question.
Oh, you do. Oh, you do.
You were looking for a way to go there.
And, oh no!
Yeah. Are we?
Are we?
Are we supposed to change the culture?
Oh, that's just too broad a question.
No, it's not. Mr. Salt and Light, what do you think?
No, I can't.
No, I can't.
I have no compulsion to change the culture. I have a compulsion to follow Jesus. And whoever he wants to change the culture is fine with me. And if I'm part of it,
oh,
I don't mind.
Oh, you're just ditching it on Jesus, are you?
I am going to ditch it on Jesus. I've learned to live inside his leadings in my life, and I love
it. And you don't change the culture?
I don't take responsibility for the world anymore. I don't.
No?
The world's sick.
Yes, it's in need of healing.
And lots of people in it are sick, and the culture reflects that. And if I'm going to change the culture, probably not.
You're going to advance the kingdom?
I'm going to advance the kingdom.
Will that affect the culture?
Asks me to. It may, for good or for ill.
Advancing the kingdom is going to, for ill, the culture?
Yeah, because the culture doesn't follow him, so it could be impacted for ill when you're bringing the kingdom. The culture around Jesus' time in Jerusalem was not impacted.
It was not made ill.
No, it wasn't made ill, but the culture was impacted to the negative because he was bringing different culture.
Why is culture negative? Why is it at enmity with the kingdom? It just is.
Because human culture is sick.
I understand that. Heal it.
Heal it? No, heal people and a different culture emerges. We're talking apples to frogs here.
Frogs. Well, leapfrog over that tree and get the job done, would you?
Whoa.
No.
You going to pull a frog pun on me? This early in a podcast. Wow.
I could have gone with the apples and oranges, but you threw that curveball of a frog.
Well, you did the whole you're Wayne Jacobson stuff. So there you go. It's just a little retribution.
This is
little
a 6-22 burn.
Little payback, as they say. We didn't.
No, I think this is an interesting question. Like, just for instance, what do you do with this whole mosque thing in New York?
I don't live in New York. So
you don't care. You're
not gonna see, now you jump to a bad conclusion.
I'm the frog thing.
It's not that I don't care.
I would just eat the apple.
Not that I don't care. It is that I am uninvolved.
I don't think that's true. I think
it is
frog
true.
In the kettle thing.
You'd have watched me earlier today. You'd have seen how uninvolved I was.
No, I understand that. And I imagine that flows out of your conclusions about culture. Potentially.
You had that look on my face like I just slapped you.
You gave me that, didn't you?
No.
Don't say that. We're going to need a video podcast before long. I don't want to do makeup every morning.
I hadn't seen that look lately. The reality is I do think that there are things going on in our world. You can say culture. You can do whatever. But I don't look at culture as a positive or a negative. I just go, it's a word that describes, well, that's where we are.
Yeah.
Okay? So I kind of go like, well, do you adjust it? Do you affect it? Do you watch it? Do you observe it? Do you stand on the sidelines? Do you engage with it? What are we called to do? And when I look at, you know, the call to be salt and light.
Follow Jesus.
I understand that.
I knew you would.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
No, ding, 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 ding. Yeah, you got it wrong.
I'm so confused.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Just take a breath. The reality is we're called to be salt and light. We're not to hide our light under a bushel. I do believe we're called into a place of engagement with our culture, not to dominate it and force it to something else. But if we don't actively participate in what's going on, it will have its own entropy towards some other outcome.
Entropy. You're pulling out big words.
I know. It's a good word.
It is a great word. But doesn't it tend toward entropy? Is it? Is that destruction?
I think its own energy. Well, yeah.
Yeah, destruction.
Well, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so I think we are called to engage in that.
My granddaughter, little 2.5-year-old Lindsay, comes into my house because I've got this big black lab who loves the grandchildren. I mean, anybody's coming the door.
That's your doorbell.
Wants to meet them at the door. And she's got a tail that beats my granddaughter.
Yeah, she's right at tail whipping height.
So she walks in my front door, both hands extended, palms wide open, waving them. No, Shibby, no, 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 Shibby, no, 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 Shibby. And she still gets beat to death by the dog. I think that's kind of what I, when I was into cultural change.
That is not culture.
No, I think when I get into cultural change. It feels like that. Here's culture moving with this mass momentum. And I'm sitting here with my little hand, I go, no, 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 no.
Lindsay should just follow Jesus.
You said that with a lisp, and I don't know why. And I'm a little offended by it, as are some of my brothers and sisters, I'm sure.
See, but I don't think it is just one or the other. I think I would agree with you. Yeah, follow Jesus.
So there's a mosque wanting to be built in New York City near the World Trade Center. What are you going to do about it? What are you, Brad Cummings, going to do about it?
I posted on Facebook that I didn't think it was a good idea.
Well, you have changed the world.
No, I didn't, but I No. See, the culture that I'm in, I'm affecting with my viewpoint.
Okay, well, they're good. Congratulations.
Thank you. Could you put a star on my chart, please?
I think you have moved culture in a more positive way today. No, and we're grateful for it.
You could care less.
I don't care less.
Cookies. So the reality...
Do you know something I don't know? Are they headed this way? I know we're making them today.
See, I know.
After you leave.
I knew that prophetically.
And we're not going to share with the podcast on because you're frustrated. Hearing about cookies they can't eat when there's soft boys.
That's the culture shaping thing.
That will change my culture today.
I know it does.
Okay.
No, but I do. I think that you have this whole frog in the kettle kind of thing that is a very difficult challenge, I would imagine, for a lot of people.
So the mosque isn't the issue. The larger issue is
it's a question of what is our engagement in the world around us. I think when you look at that, there's a whole bunch of beach and there's all these starfish and I can never save them all.
Wow, you're mocking.
So
mock meter.
Yeah, I know. But you look at that and it's like, okay, so no, that you don't have the time to throw them all back. But I do love the little kid that says, well, it matters to this one and it matters to this one and it matters to this one. And I go like, okay, if you don't like the big macro scale, pull it back and it's still called to engagement to the world around us, which is it's a subset of that culture. And so I go, gosh, there are things that are happening in our nation, challenges that are before us, really big ones. Okay?
Really big.
Really big one.
Really big.
And you can sit there and go, oh my gosh.
I'm not doing that.
Or you can go like, well, I wonder how that's going to sort itself out.
Not doing that.
But I think the real question is, well, where are we? And how are we called into it? And how do we as individuals, not as a group collective, how do I drive the herd here? It's more like, Lord, what do I do? Because if we do nothing, it is going to go its own way and devolve into something that I don't think anyone's going to be happy with. So how do we engage as salt and light in the culture? Because, I mean, I do think that that is one of the central questions that as individuals we need to be kind of asking the Lord and going, okay, God, which starfish do I pick up? What do I do in that? No, I don't live in New York. It's not my mosque.
Okay. Wow, that's a relief. I was sure it was your mom.
Yeah.
Wow.
He's not my imam. I would never follow an imam named Ralph.
Ralph, your mom. Okay. Wow, we're going to get a visit, you know.
If that one's going to come against me.
Oh, yeah. That's Brad Cummings at thegodjourney.com.
Thank you.
Oh, Brad at thegodjourney.com.
But I do go, okay, I do find it rather frustrating in our culture, and I'm not trying to go political, but here you have this wonderful thing in our nation called freedom of religion. And it seems to apply to all the other religions but Christianity, because that's freedom from Christianity.
Oh, now you're talking about a very small...
So freedom of religion.
Now you're talking about a very small religious sect called liberals who feel that way.
Who are in charge. and who are shaping the courts and the laws and driving our economy to a wrong place.
Well, the Republicans started that, you have to remember. The conservatives started us down this road.
I think greedy people started that, and I don't care what their party is.
You've got the arrogant left and now the corrupt arrogant left, but we had the corrupt arrogant right for a long time.
I know. I am so for the mass missing middle.
I am too.
It's not even funny.
And it's not exactly probably the Tea Party, unfortunately.
No, I'd say that's why, to me, I'm going like, okay, if we leave this to the pundits and to the paper people up on the ratings, you know, run media, we're not getting to the real dialogue of how do you go about doing it? You know, What conclusions do we draw about Islam? I mean, I'm sensitized to it in a way I wasn't before because of my recent visit to Israel. And I got friends now who are all prepared for all-out war to have happened by the end of September. And you're going like, really?
To have happened. That's a future past participle somewhere. Right?
I know. Time coupling. Well, you're in Dallas, so.
I am in Dallas. And I'm affecting culture while I'm there.
That's so great. I love that.
If I find somebody building a mosque near the Dallas airport, I'm going to speak out against it.
That's awesome.
Thank you.
That is so good.
Doing my part.
Record that.
Well, after doing bridge building work for 15 years and trying to help people find a way to live together without all the rancor, it does work where people have the option. The problem within our culture now, we don't have that option.
Is that really true that we don't have that option? We don't have that TV program, but I don't know that it's true that we don't have that option.
Well, it's not that we don't have the option. It's that no one is aware the option is available. We now see our culture in two extremes. We do, left and right. And that's what our politicians service. That's how they fragment the population to get elected. That's what our 24-hour news channels do. I've walked into rooms polarized, gay rights activists. Wow. Can we rewind that? Do it again. Gay rights activists, Protestant conservative pastors, and they're sitting there ready to fight. And you come into the room and say, you know what? Here's the ideal of a democratic republic. How do we come up with a solution that respects our differences? Not I have to win over you or you have to win over me. Whenever I've given that option to a room, I get this deer in the headlights look like you got to be out of your mind. There's no such thing as that. But I always walked out of the room with a 90 5% to 100% vote for a solution that served their differences.
Awesome.
Is it wise, if you are a moderate Muslim in America, is it wise, is it even appropriate? Why would you even want to build a mosque near Ground Zero that has overtones to maybe the extremist elements in your religious faith, but why wouldn't you find a better place to build your mosque?
Yeah, hello. Absolutely. Thank you.
But is there right to build it there? Should Absolutely. They have any less right than anybody else? No, they shouldn't. But there's something about propriety and culture that's now lost, and particularly religious culture. You've been to the Middle East. You know how the Muslims seized Temple Mount. And
yeah.
It was given to them, but the whole purpose now why...
The Jerusalem bishop, in order as kind of a bartered negotiation of go and wipe out the Jews.
But you know why it's a holy site for them now? Because the prophet Muhammad never came to Temple Mount, was never in Jerusalem. But he had a dream that he was on Temple Mount, so now it's holy. The whole idea of religions is always take the high places of the city. I mean, go through New England. Churches are built on the hill in the town with the highest steeple so people can see it, and its bells rang out to dominate the life of the community.
And you know what's going on? I mean, this
Catholic
this,
churches in Europe, same thing.
I understand. What was so disturbing, at least being in the Middle East, is the erection of all these, it's just the right word, these minarets. I mean, I had these guys that like, that's just a big phallus symbol.
No different than a steeple. No different.
No different. But the aggression of erecting this big tower.
Stop it.
Building.
You can't do
constructing.
Manufacturing. A minaret. Let's manufacture the minaret. Okay.
Whatever. It's standing tall and upright.
This have to go on the explicit.
No.
This have to go on the explicit side of iTunes. You realize that, don't
Stop
you?
Stop it. Well, that audience needs to be seasoned as well. So
Absolutely.
That's perfect. Put a clean and an explicit version. That's awesome. No, but here they have it, 5 a.m. throughout the city. This call to prayer. I gotta tell you, it pierces. It's not this, oh, what a wonderful, it is disruptive, aggressive, and you're going like, I see.
Where Kent and I slept in Nairobi was across the street from a mosque. 5 a.m.
Yeah.
We heard it.
Yeah, you're just going like, golly. That doesn't seem to be respectful of people. And so, you know, you can apply this to all religion where it is the crusading effort to, we're going to convert you by this sword. You're just going like, no, that's not really how any of this.
It's in the name of God, I have the right to be in your face.
Yeah.
And we Christians are as guilty of that as any other religion we want to name. How big is yours? Is the question that dominates the size of congregations, magazines, book sales. It's the same thing over and over again.
It is. That's why I'm not for buildings.
That's a fair question.
No.
Your mind's in the gutter, my
you
man.
You took me there.
I'm totally innocent.
I don't believe that.
What I love about Jesus' words when he came was saying the Son of Man did not come to be served, but to serve. I think the challenge of believers following Jesus in the world is how am I redemptive in the culture by the way I live in love? And in a democratic culture, do I have the right to speak out on issues and maybe even the responsibility to speak out on issues that concern me and affect me? Absolutely. I'm not unvocal about my political points of view. I never have been. But is that the way we most profoundly affect culture? And particularly most of my speaking out has been, at least for the team I'm on, brothers and sisters in Jesus, let's stop forcing our morality on a culture that doesn't love the God we love, because that's just stupid. Even the Son of Man did not come to be served. In other words, I want culture to be what I want instead of he came to serve people that they might come to light and come to light, come to transformation. To lay down your life in a culture is a far more, what we call left-handed power as opposed to right-handed power, which I've got the political power, I've got the swords, I've got the chariots, I've got whatever to force you to do what I think is in your best interest. To me, that's the cancer that absolutely destroys our society. It's no different when the Christians use it, the Muslims use it, the liberals use it, it's the gay rights activists use it. It's the same thing. I have the right to force my view down your throat.
Honest inquiry here.
Sure.
The whole idea that, I mean, because I've got wonderful brothers and sisters who are going like, hey, I'm going to fight for the value that's in America, the freedom of religion. If they want to build that thing in New York, well, they have the right to. And I mean, they're absolutely passionate. And I'm going to give them a free pass on the genuineness of the ideal of freedom of religion, going, no, they're not Muslims, they're not Muslim sympathizers, they're not anything other than, well, no, in our country they have the right to do that. And I go, okay, that costs you nothing. What about the people that had their families die and that right now is a painful affront to them? What do we say to them in the name of, you know, yes, you have the right, but no, that's really not very sensitive and kind. I think the biggest challenge I see in this whole cultural dynamic is we can operate with our assumptions of, you know what, I'm not going to force my way on somebody. What do you do when someone else is? They're coming in to force. They're saying, great, I'm going to kill you. Now, I'm not applying that to Islam. I'm just saying with...
okay, no, good. I'm glad.
But some
are.
I know. And some are rightly doing so, but I don't think it's true of the whole.
Some are rightly doing so?
I think there are some people who are hell-bent on killing us.
Oh, absolutely. That's what I was saying. Okay. Yes, some are. Absolutely. But not rightly. Wrongly. Wrongly they are.
But rightly discerning that's what their stated goals are.
Yep.
I think the real challenge, and I mean, I saw this profoundly being in Israel. They're sitting in this situation where they got their enemies camped, stated, you know, our goal is to wipe you out. That's right there. They're not looking for peaceful coexistence. They're looking for domination and annihilation. And they're going like, what do we do? And there are people in that arena who are leftist bent in their politics, and they're bending over backwards trying to accommodate and understand and do all that. And then there's other people saying, every one of those things is interpreted by this desire to dominate as weakness, and it's only giving them the power and the right to come and dominate. And you go like, Lord, what do you do then? It would be great if everyone was on the same page of saying, we will fight fair, we will allow our wisdom and
one
our
another.
Truth, and we'll respect each other, and we'll honor each other, and we'll be... politically correct to each other's sensitivities. I mean, if everyone was doing that, then I would go, well, yay, then it'll work and let truth triumph and it won't be one will dominating another.
Hallelujah. Well, ding, ding, ding.
Yeah,
ding, ding.
Yeah. It might be Jesus returning. But what do you do when there's a force that is saying, well, that's really nice.
We're going to bomb you off the face of the earth.
But I'm going to get you. How do you respond? I mean, are we pacifists? Do we just lay it down? Do we stand up? I mean, those I think are the challenging questions that are not just the global panacea of, oh, theory out there. It's like, I think most people have to deal with that in their own lives in some way, shape, or form, going, I don't want to use the tools of an enemy system and structure of domination. But how do I stand against when that's been done to me? Do I stand against? How do I do that? I think those are really challenging questions in terms of, hey, Jesus inside me, what do I do?
Yep.
Any thoughts?
I don't think there's a principle to drive that discussion. On my best day, I'm not bright enough to answer that. I think there's two ways to live that Scripture points to. On the one side is God's truth and justice,
which this is on his throne,
and you stand up to the oppressor,
and you say, nope, sorry, you can't go there. Government is specifically mandated, scripturally.
To do that.
To stand up against the injustice of the world.
And to impose consequences.
And to stand up for the oppressed. And government's never done either. Government becomes
the
oppressor.
No, government tends to serve self.
It does, and it tends to become the oppressor. And our government is about as oppressive as it's ever been right now, and as corrupt as it's ever been. Now, that's the trouble. But there's two ways.
Was that the vote for change?
There's two ways to live in relationship with you. By law, and I do the bridge builder thing, you say, law was always meant to be a floor. It wasn't
a minimum.
It wasn't meant to be the ceiling. This is what we have to do for each other.
Right.
But that's love and, that's truth and justice tries to define the law.
Right.
Jesus came and lived inside of love, which can go way beyond the law. It uses the law as the floor, and the ceiling is as high as we can find a sense of mutual respect and love and admiration. Let grace and mercy exist inside the framework of love. We're caught in a world that lives between those two things.
Yes.
If we're just loving and watch an oppressive person torment our neighbor, watch a young girl be molested by her dad, and not jump into that fray and say, no, I'm sorry, you can't do that. Well, you should just love me and forgive me. No, sorry. My love and forgiveness for the girl is going to make me stand up to you and say, dude,
right,
you got to stop. And I'll put you in jail to make you stop. Right. I will do. So justice and righteousness are a deal. And love and mercy is another deal. How do we come up with a principle to tell us how to live in those circumstances?
We don't. You come up with a person who lives on the inside and gives you some nudges.
We're back to following Jesus. We're back to saying, God, what are you asking me to do here? Is this where I lay down my life in love and mercy? Or is this where I have to stand up for what's right and true? And those are the most difficult issues, I think, that we deal with.
Yeah, I think the reason I want to bring it is I just know that right now in our nation's whole cultural political debate and the dividing of camps, you're just going like, that really is that central question. Nobody wins when somebody forces their will on somebody else. Nobody.
Right.
That one seems to go afoul.
But a lot of that, to be fair, people who are trying to force their will on others are sometimes people who feel like the will of the majority has been forced on them for centuries. And they're trying to just find an equilibrium, a sense of equal rights. That's how it's often argued. It's not, no, sorry, you have to do it my way. There are people who are saying, gosh, I've been doing it your way for generations. I'm tired of it. I want to find where I have the equal standing under. The whole civil rights legislation was about that. It wasn't about preferred treatment. Ideally, it was about equal rights that had been abrogated for centuries. So that brings into it a whole other thing. What I read this morning in the Psalm, Sarah and I read together, in him, righteousness and peace kiss each other. That in God, there is no dividing line between love and justice, mercy and righteousness. All of it summed up in him. Come get his mercy. I love this Luke 19 story. Come get his mercy. You know, the guy's forgiven this huge debt. He's been this horrible guy. He's owed all kinds of money. And the master's come saying, you know, I'm going to cancel your debt. And then he goes right out, finds a guy, just owes him a few pennies. The guy can't pay it. And he says, have mercy on me. He says, forget you. I'm going to throw you. I'm going to justice you. And what Jesus says about the parable, I think we've misinterpreted this parable. I think what we've always said is, if you don't forgive, God won't forgive you. And I think what the parable is really teaching is, when you're truly forgiven of the great crud you've done in the world, you will live forgiving to other people. If you're going to live out of justice for other people, demanding your rights with them, then what I know about you is that you're still in the prison of your own debt because you've never understood mercy. Just don't. So when I hold you to the law, my perception of the law, I prove to you that mercy is meaningless to me, that I have not understood mercy. I've not participated in mercy. I may have felt like it. I may feel like, oh, I got my slate wiped clean, but now I'm going to get you. I'm going to get mine from getting you. And I think that's just vile. But how we live, how does righteousness and peace kiss each other? Only in the Son. And only in Jesus, and only by praying in every situation I'm in. God, do I lay my life down here? And yet, look weak, let somebody overrun me. That is definitely what Jesus did at the end of his life. He did.
Right. Is there a place, though, for standing firm in that same heart and same spirit. I mean, just like when you bring the idea that someone is attacking a lesser person, and
yeah,
it's, love doesn't at that moment stand still. Love moves into action to go into protection, and that is that's that equal sense of going, wait a minute, no.
No, I hear that. I think it's always easier to stand up for someone else. I really do.
Yeah.
I'm willing to lay down for me. I really am. I'm willing to say, you know what? God's got my back. At the end of the day, justice comes from him. I don't think we're bright enough to execute justice on each other in this world. I think we're basically going to get it wrong. For me to stand up for a weaker person being oppressed by a stronger person, that's easy. I mean, I don't have a deep desire. I got to figure this one out, man. Does Jesus want me standing up for that person who's being beat to death by that robber guy? I don't have to sit around and say, gosh, I don't know what to do about that. I do know what to do about that. To me, if we don't know him well enough to know how to live in the culture and to speak out, I'm all for people. Facebook postings, I know we made fun of it, blogs, go to political meetings in your area, speak out for what you believe is true and right and just. Just make sure it's not, I'm going down to fight for my self-interest. I think when
I think that's one of the biggest challenges, because like you look at this mosque thing. You're in California. What does it affect you? Well, it does. It's not as if we're completely divorced, but no, it doesn't have a direct effect.
Well,
is a mosque down in the 9/11 area, is that going to rape and pillage somebody? Well, not me.
And it's not on the site. It's a couple of blocks away.
Right. But
doesn't face the site.
I understand it. But there are people to whom it has that emotional impact on. Otherwise, we wouldn't even be having this.
Right.
What do we do there? Because I think one of the big challenges in this whole realm of political correctness is this altruistic good idea of being sensitive to others. But it seems to not be applied uniformly. It seems like there are some groups that have had that mindset that, well, you know what? We've been oppressed for quite a while, so we're not going to do the political correct thing. We're going to stand up and demand our way. And then is everyone else supposed to be neutered to a place of, okay, I guess it's your turn now? I think that's one of the real challenges.
It is a real challenge.
How do you – but is it a principle to apply? There is a sense of going like, Lord, in these given moments, in these particular instances – what would you have me do? I think is the right question. I don't have an answer. I just know I know a whole bunch of predicaments where, golly, there isn't a principle because I can make one for both sides.
Yeah, I want to go back to the point about, because I think when I've done bridge builder stuff, the most powerless people in the room in terms of just relational power are the people who are arguing in their own self-interest.
Yeah.
When people come down to a meeting and argue against their self-interest for the good of another, they have incredible power. And I've watched it in these common ground settings where you present people with another option. Let's not say, okay, this side gets to win over this side, but how do each of these two sides be fair to their differences? I have watched people on side A argue for a point for side B. And I go, That has incredible power. And then side B will start saying, well, I don't think you'd be really happy with this. Why don't we kind of get – because I think you'd be better with this, wouldn't you? And they go, yeah, we really would be better with that. And I've watched rooms –
see, that's marvelous.
Non-Christian people, just people that
are – when everyone's getting on the same page of going, I'm not fighting for myself. I'm fighting for us.
Yeah. A better culture that is based on mutual respect, and that allows – love and graciousness to have a play, to say, yes, it's my right to build that there, but in the reality of what kind of emotional stress that's going to put on people because of the confusion about where is Islam and the whole deal with radical Islam.
Do you have to do that right now
with
these sensitivities?
Yeah.
Or can we find an alternative place
where
you can do that?
That's not political correctness, because I don't think you can read the Gospels and accuse Jesus of political correctness.
I just don't.
No, I don't think you can.
He was not.
I'm not. I am not a fan of political correctness anywhere. I just feel like his neutered speech.
He was all for speaking the truth, even if he wasn't going to force it. He was still for speaking it to say, this is the way it is.
Right.
You don't like it? Tough. But he gets to win the end of the day. One of my favorite passages in the message is the last part of 1 Peter 3, where it talks about, you know, Jesus high and lifted up at the right hand of God the Father, and all things will be subject unto him at the end. It's that kind of scripture. But Eugene Peterson translates it, he gets the last word on everything. I love that. My father grew up in our vineyard. My dad, no matter what workers were in his vineyard, no matter who was doing whatever, whether it was pruning or picking grapes, whatever, my dad was always the last person to walk that row after something was done to it. Mm-hmm. If anything wasn't right, he fixed it. Grapes were missed, he picked them. Vines not tied right, he'd retie them. I love that scripture because even with the crud of our culture, and maybe that's why Jesus could live the way he lived, laying it down, whatever, because he knew at the end of the day, I'm going to get the last word. We're assured of that
same thing. He did know he was coming back.
Yeah, well, I think for us to know that even about the things going on in our lives that are very painful and very torturous, at the end of the day, Jesus gets the last word. It may not. I mean, you can say it to people who died in prison camps in Nazi Germany and say, right. Jesus get the last word on this. Well, the last word hasn't been spoken yet on some things.
Yeah.
And yeah, there were people that were cruelly treated and oppressively treated. And yeah, the society of our world failed them. Mm-hmm. Does God still get the last word on that? That's our hope. At the end of the day, he gets the last word on everything.
Right.
And I love that.
Question for you. And it's not, you know, I don't know. I have no idea how long we've been, but it's on my mind, so I'm going to ask it. When you look in, it's more in the historical passages of the Old Testament. I think people really trip and stumble over some of the harder dynamics that, one, come out of law, where you do. It's like, you know, you've got all this concern about Sharia law and the harshness of it, and you're just going like, well, there's stoning in the Bible. And I would edit it in terms of the context, in terms of, well, it seemed like Jesus came and he amended some things because of what he was there in fact doing and did on the cross. I think there's a reason why we don't stone people today. And I think it has everything with the cross.
Good
reason. I think it's a good reason, yeah.
Yeah, good.
Okay?
Me too.
But it was there initially, and you do have times where God says, I want you guys to go in, and he gives directives of war to go wipe out people.
Animals.
Yeah.
Children.
Yeah. What do you do with those? Because those are there, and I don't want to go like, well, let's just ignore those. I mean, I have come to some conclusions about those that I think explains them, not away, but gives me an understanding of what's going on there. But I do think that it's like, golly, there's no way I could draw a conclusion that the God that's revealed from start of Old Testament to finish of New Testament that is a complete pacifist and doesn't have war realities. I mean, I look at Armageddon and all this other, it's like, wait a minute. There's some stuff in here that doesn't just fit just one little principle. What do you do with that?
I love it.
You love it.
We made the joke a few weeks ago from what this guy heard in England say, we have to ask the question, how much did Paul get it wrong? I think it's hilarious because I really don't think Paul got it wrong. I think our interpretation of Paul is often wrong. Paul the Apostle.
Right.
I was reading David. I this is a whole podcast. Probably maybe the next one we'll do because there's a psalm I was reading that a few years back I would read that psalm and go, yeah, because it's all about, you know, bash my enemies and crush the children's heads against stones. And I'm reading it this time in my life going through the season I'm in right now. And I'm going, I have no resonance with that. None. Did David get it wrong? Is David trapped in it? Because David has a lot of shame issues. He's always, don't let me be ashamed and shame my enemies. He's got a lot of shame issues. It's pre-cross. David sees into God's heart to some degree, but I wonder how much, and it would take looking at some of the passages, I think David gets it wrong. I think we get to interpret who God is through the person of Christ, that he is the exact representation of the nature of the Father. Did people in the Old Testament misunderstand him? Even the New Testament says they did. Did God tell them to go wipe out every animal, child, and woman in the cultures of Canaan when they came in? That's what it says. Is it true? For me, here's the problem. It doesn't jive with the nature of Jesus in the New Testament. It doesn't. So I have to ask one of two questions. Either God really didn't say it, but they thought he did, so that's how they recorded it. Or there's something so incredibly diabolical going on there that that's the only solution God had to deal with that culture and to maintain a place for grace to eventually come.
Yeah, see, I mean,
and I don't know the answer to that, but it would take a longer podcast right. than the 2 minutes we have left right. to get into that.
I will quickly add, I interpret God's activity in the flood not as an act of enraged vengeance against wrongdoing, but I see it as a rescue because it had gone so diabolically wrong that this was the only redemptive element left that he could preserve, and if he didn't do that, there wasn't a line through which Jesus could emerge.
Yeah, a longer podcast here, I'm sure, because you've got David and others who regard anyone non-Jewish as the enemy that needs to be destroyed and devoured, even though the law calls for Israel to be generous to the outsider right. and the alien.
Right.
So we do have some really...
But you also have in the New Testament, you know, when you read through the book of Revelation, I mean, you know, yeah, there's many ways you can interpret that, but my gosh, there's some amazing...
But
things that are unfolding and happening, and there's judgments, and there's
it is, but it's,
and there's a lot of people that get wiped out.
But it's God acting. Jesus is telling us, love your enemies. Somebody wants your coat, give them your cloak also. Somebody wants you to go a mile, go two. Jesus is asking us to live very differently, even in the face of, there's a time coming when God has to sum up this age. And a lot of the armies whacking each other are armies after armies, just the discord of humanity. Some of it is God's intrusion to end this age and to devour sin and shame and darkness by those who wouldn't find it in redemption. He destroys it by his power. That's there too. A longer podcast, I'm sure.
Yeah, no, I raise it because I think it is part of those challenges that I don't think it is. I think it really drives us to the place that, you know what? I can't lean just to my own understanding. I can't navigate just upon my mastery of principles that I derive out of Scripture. If it doesn't come out of the fruit of a dependent dialogue
yep.
with my shepherd who is leading me and I'm actively leaning on, I'm not necessarily going to get it right, even if I can quote chapter and verse and justify
absolutely.
What I want to do.
No other way to live. Because God, Scripture is clear. God is love itself and poured himself out for our redemption with great grace and mercy in the Son. But God's love is not a warm, fuzzy, mamby-pamby. I'm just being nice to everybody. There's a justice inside of God that redeems the culture, defends the oppressed, and brings light into darkness. That's a part of it too. Are we bright enough to sort it out by principles, as you said?
Not by ourselves.
Thank you for joining us today on The God Journey. If you'd like to participate in the conversation, you may do so at our website, thegodjourney.com.